Welcome back, everyone. I'm Steve, and you're listening to the Conspicuous Podcast. Today, I've got with me Mark Smethurst from Time to Float. You'll remember him from last week's episode on business cards. And as usual, joined by Stuart Walton of Conspicuous CBM. Let's do Twitter handles first. So you can speak to me at Lilac Films. You can speak to Mark at Time to Float UK. And Stuart, you can speak to at Conspicuous CBM. Now, let's just do a recap of what we all do, why we're on this show and why we're doing it. So, Mark, tell us a little bit about Time to Float and what it's all about.
Hi, guys. Yeah, so Time to Float is the West Midlands' first flotation therapy centre based in the county town of Stafford. It does what it says on the tin. It's a flotation therapy. It's lying in 10 inches water with 800 pounds of Epsom salts in it. The water's heated to body temperature. Because there's so much salt in the water, it makes it more dense than the Dead Sea. And the reason why you float, it's great for physical ailments and also mentally recharging, mental detox. And as we like to say at networking events, come and ask us and find out why doing nothing feels so good.
Fantastic. And Stuart, tell us what you do.
I just do networking, Steve.
Stuart does networking. We're getting lazy and lazy with introductions, I run around with a camera. There we go.
There we are. But it's short and sweet, and now we know what we all do.
This week's episode, then, is customer loyalty at what cost? So we're looking at all those loyalty schemes that we see around. Groupon is clearly one of the biggest ones out there, and I think you'd be hard pressed to find someone that doesn't have a Tesco's club card now. Do people still have Nectar cards?
Though? I do. I'd like to go on occasion to Sainsbury's and get Martin, you know.
Do you know what I think saved that? It was eBay. When they sort of had the eBay partnership with Nectar, people suddenly started realising, actually, we can actually get some use out of it, because it was just terrible before then. You'd have to sort of, I think we saved for 10 years, and we were able to buy enough food to get us through sort of like a couple of days with it.
I save them up, and then occasionally I just, for my Nectar points, and go and buy a sort of iTunes card, but it's usually only a 15 quid one, so it's hardly, you know, after all that effort for 15 quid's worth of free, you know.
But there is something that makes you feel great, isn't there? Paid for your sort of thing. Though you paid many thousands of pounds to get to that point where you got that free £15 iTunes card.
Bit of secret yesterday, Costa Coffee, I went along, there was some free promotion, triple coffee points, and I went to Coffee yesterday in Stafford and actually bought myself, some espresso so I could get triple points. What a mug am I,
Well, clearly,
I'm always a sucker for these things.
So to go through some of the other new ones, there's Perks Loyalty that I've seen around on the App Store, and I've seen locally being used. Big Local App as well, which is a franchise, and then sort of like the Best Of, which has been around for some time now as well, which pays businesses to sign up to it, and they do a similar kind of loyalty thing for it. But Mark, you've got something interesting you just started using for your business. Could you tell us a bit about how that's been working for you, your loyalty scheme?
So yeah, I mean, obviously we're still a relatively new business, and in an industry that I will happily admit that 90% of people probably have never heard of before, obviously meetings, network events, and obviously the people who come in enjoyed it and told their friends about it. It's not something, so we need to find ways of getting people to come here and be loyal to us. And so we've been looking at all sorts of different things. So yes, we've investigated the Groupons and Living Socials. I've had a very long look at the Perks app, and the difference in all of them is such a marked difference. And they're aimed at different markets as well. And we just we found something that we're really comfortable with, completely off that bat, which is ironically just a plugin for our website.
But what is WordPress plugin?
A WordPress plugin. That's right. Sorry. Yes. It's a Sumo WordPress plugin. But what it gives us is total freedom to reward our customers as much as we want. So what we've set up is that once a customer floats with us, they become a member. They get a member's number. They refer it to their friends with a member's number. Their friends get a discount. They rack up points in the same way as your Nectars and your club cards.
And what's the offer you're running currently then? So is it sort of like 5 floats and you get your 6th free, that kind of theme?
It's along those lines, but it's not just that. And this is where it caught my eye from a marketing point of view, and also a way of loyalty, which is that if you follow us on Twitter or on our Facebook page, we'll give you points. If you give us a review, we'll give you points. If you like a post, if you share a post, if you retweet a tweet, the opportunities are endless. And at the end of the day, there's nothing better for a company that if you're going to get almost snow blindness on your Facebooks and your Twitters with all like this, all do that. But what if we gave you something back What is like, you know what, I like this company and I want to get involved with that. And hey, look, I can get a free floater at the end of it. It's quite persuasive. And a lot of people are just like, yeah, it's been quite interesting this weekend watching the spike of people sharing more than they would normally do because they know that what's coming with the this...
Well, we just heard from Stuart saying that he bought a Costa coffee just because it was triple points. And, and actually, when I think about it, I bought on eBay something that I think about. I didn't really need it then and there, but because I had 10 times Nectar points offered through eBay, and I probably had a discount voucher as well, I thought, you know, I've got to use this voucher before it runs out and get these points. And I think there's no doubt it's a motivator. But let's look at a horror story first. So... some of you may know this story, but it's based around Groupon. And the question lies with, is customer loyalty worth it to get all those sales in at the cost of potentially either having more than your business can cope with and ruining your reputation? And this is essentially what happened to a small, I think it was a US-based business. I haven't got these details here for it, but they were a cupcake company. They advertised on Groupon. The offer must have been a great one because they had 102,000 cupcakes ordered in the space of a week, to the point where they actually had to cancel it when they realized how big it was going. Now, I know Groupon are pretty hard line and they held them to task for this. So they were essentially put out of business because they couldn't keep up with the supply and demand of what was requested from this. And to make matters worse, it worked out that the cost of this Groupon campaign, they're actually running at a loss. So the cost of the cooking ingredients to make these cakes, as well as staff time, manpower, rent of the facilities, it far outweighed actually how much they're getting from the cakes. So they lost their business on the back of this Groupon offer. Really sad case for it. And do look this up as well. I think it's called The Bakery Had to Make 102,000 Cupcakes on Groupon. And it's scary to think that people just wouldn't think about the offer and think about actually, is getting people just buying from me the right thing when it's actually at the cost of not making any money?
And this is the theme that, for those that have been listening to this podcast, has been hammered home by you guys, is that think about your marketing. This is a classic case of how not to do anything. I mean, it's to hear any local business go out of business is not good, and the way it did was horrible. But they've got to be slightly accountable for the fact that they didn't cap as to how many people that they were going to sell it to. They didn't work out their margins for actually creating the cupcakes. And in this particular occasion, it's a industry that is very cutthroat. You know, 5p, 10p more, and you're going down the road to the next one until they develop such a following from people that say, you know what, you may be 10p more, but I'm coming to you because your cupcakes are the most amazing ever.
Now, I've worked in this, in marketing this industry for quite a few different bakeries, and I think there is a lot of naivety with their marketing that there's
they're sort of hobbyists, aren't they, and sort of getting into business and the marketing side.
To an extent, I think that's true. That's, that most of them do start off as hobbyists that clearly have a talent for it and can grow very quickly with it and move into their own bakeries. But I think this is the naivety that will create loyal customers when they just try our product. So all we've got to do is get them to try it, and it doesn't matter if we run it at a loss.
And let's call a spade a shovel. The sharks at Groupon that got hold of them and said, oh, you sell thousands of customers will be coming day in, day out buying your cupcakes. They've sold them the dream. They've sold them the London Bridge, unfortunately. Yep. And this is what Groupon do. They're very talented. I've had three or four sets of Groupon salespeople ringing me. But it's only when you sit back and look at what you get for it, what you have to do, and what they get out of it. And it's just, it's a personal opinion, it's why would you do it? It's almost like a business killer, not a business creator.
A lot of times these people are doing it, and I think, you know, some naive hope they're going to make, you know, the millions from doing it, without actually thinking, this is just part of my marketing spend. Groupon is not going to bring me more business. I'm actually going to have to pay Groupon, you know, all these people, you know, things. It's part of my marketing, so therefore, what am I going to get out of it? It's like building a website. It's like going networking. It's like doing social media. None of these things make you millions. It's part of, you know, do I want to invest in Groupon? What am I going to get out of it? Is it going to pick me up more customers? At the end of the day, if you're not picking up, you know, massive numbers of new customers in order to build your database, in order to email them new offers or whatever you think you're going to do with it, you have just really not understood what Groupon's about. So again, you know, you've been naive, you know, you get screwed over, and tough luck. Well, I'm sorry, you know, you should have read small print like everybody else does, you know.
I mean, it's the whole buying of the customers. You're creating yourself a database. So if you're a brand new startup, I understand the concept of it, But the problem you have with Groupons, and again, for those of your listeners that aren't aware of what happens with Groupon, yes, you as potential purchasers see something, let's go with the cupcake at half of the normal price. That's great. But then you have to share that revenue with Groupon. And what they don't tell you about is that Groupon keeps the money and they will only pay you your share of the vouchers that are redeemed.
So, and I imagine the revenue share is quite high. I mean, is it 50% that you're 50, sharing?
Yeah, they start you off at 50-50.
Right.
But it's 50-50 of the vouchers that are redeemed. If they don't redeem it, Groupon keeps the money. You don't get to see it.
So this poor company would have only had to be, would have only been paid by the people that actually were picking up their orders. So they would have made nothing from all those. I mean, we all know that the vouchers clearly work because people don't redeem. I think it's 1 in 3 aren't redeemed as well. So a massive, massive earner for that industry. Now, the question I'd like to discuss there with this is, do these loyalty schemes, do they create good customers for you? Or do they just bring you discount hunters, which are just those customers that you don't really want? The ones that they're buying from you because you're cheap. And ultimately, all you're doing is you're just temporarily devaluing your market and your product. And those people forever look at that product as being, well, we bought from this cupcake bakery because it was a pound of cupcake. We wouldn't pay £2 for it though. And you bring in all these discount hunters that then just go on to the next thing. Like I sort of said, a group of sharks just go around and they just look for the cheapest product. They're not quality conscious. They're not the ones where they appreciate the customer service. They just appreciate the price. And do you want those customers in your business? Are they ever going to be profitable to you?
I agree with you. I think the only proviso, the only ones that you would agree with is Stuart's perfect analogy with the coffee. It wasn't a case of you come into our shop and we will give you these points. It wasn't specifically for that. It was just like, yeah, you know what, I fancy a coffee, I'll get it today.
It's a motivator.
One actually I can buy.
So I got an email. I said, cost the coffee did it right, you register with your guard, they send you an email and go, little brain triggered, I'm in town, get myself, I think it's cost them nothing, really.
To name another local business, I think, that does this very well is Modish Lokes, actually. Mm. They're not currently a competitor of yours, are they, Mark?
No, I mean, I'd like to think we're sort of like siblings, cousins, as it were. We are sort of health and wellness, but yeah, their marketing is absolutely spot on.
Well, they clearly sort of know they've got a very high value product in there, in their spas and retreats that they do. And the way they discount it is, it's never a big discount that you get from that, but it's incentivized. It's done around themes such as Valentine's Day, or I think they've had Christmas ones before as well, or they'll do sort of like trial ones where sort of like they try and create advocates of the product where they'll have a limited number where you get to try a new service or something like that. And it's very slick. I think the only thing that lets them down is they clearly aren't up with their new technology. And when I've tried to do it, you're kind of required to go through their phone booking. You can't just do it all online.
Yeah.
Clearly, the future for any loyalty scheme to be successful is being able to do it all completely digitally, so that you can see the orders come through and you can do it on your phone, you can do it on your tablet or your laptop.
Or maybe on that specific industry, it could be a case of they're still trying to retain the person-to-person contact. Because it is a very personalised industry.
That's true, that's true. And of course, that's where you get the upsell as well. You can get upsells through doing it digitally, but it's nowhere near in comparison to having a human on the end of the line that's been trained in sales that can do the upsell very well and can see someone where they know all the add-ons that you've got as a company. You bring them in with that offer and then you upsell them to something, and they realise they've actually paid twice what they would have paid if they just bought it at normal rates anyway. But they still feel pleased because they feel they've got discounts. So
yeah.
I think that clever manipulation of discounts is clearly can be very much in the favour of businesses when done right for it. So let's look about the data side of things then for that, because that's the other big incentive for companies, is that you're not just getting new customers, you get the data out there with customers that you can market to and through, and creating advocates and promoters for that. Now, what was your agenda of running your own loyalty scheme, Mark?
I'm quite happy to admit I've looked at all options, including the dreaded G word, the Groupon, and having looked at it all, it's a case of, yes, I could get 200, 300, 400, 500 new people through the door, which as a new business can be the difference between getting to the end of the first 12 months and not. But to me, it's a case of how much, and you've alluded to it a few minutes ago, it's how much value will people put onto it. And it's a case of, it's great people trying it, but if they're not going to come back, then it's wasted my time.
They'll just be waiting for the next Groupon to come around.
And so from my point of view, it's like, I genuinely, what I'm building here is something for the future, which I'm going to build on loyal customers, to use the from the books, create raving fans. And thankfully, he says, touching the wood in front of him, and that seems to be working in the fact that we're getting people that are loving it, telling their friends, and now it's a case of, so let's take it further, let's build a real strong relationship with every one of you.
Do you think you were using it, Mark, to sort of get over that sort of initial, you know, reticence to try something new, you know, time to float, it might, you know, sounds a bit, might sound a bit weird to some people, or they've never heard of it. You know, there's a number of reasons why people won't try it, and yeah, you know, you're not throwing thousands at sort of say direct marketing. So this is an opportunity for people to say sample the product.
Yeah,
and you need them to funnel them to the raving fans who are going to come in, and then you know, to want the tire kickers, you just say thanks very much, that's been great. But then bother, you know, wasting my time again, really. You know,
it's a fair question, but the question back is, for every tire kicker that you're putting in there that have just come because their boyfriend or girlfriend had bought them because they couldn't think of anything else to buy for them, there could be somebody else's spot who actually wants to be there, or who, as we mentioned before, if you've got an illness, needs to be there. We can take away pain and get people in a position where they're not feeling as much pain as though when they walked in the place.
Yeah.
And having now seen that over the last few months, that's a driving force for me personally for this business, is let's get people feeling good. But at the same time, it was like, okay, so what's my marketing strategy going to be? And it's a case of, let's reward the people that want to be here, because if they're feeling loved, they're going to tell their friends about it. The friends are going to start asking a bit more. They might interact with me. Great, I'll chat with you all day on phone, online. Come and have a look at the premises. I don't mind. At the end of the day, when you come, hopefully you get an amazing experience. You'll tell your friends. And then if you're getting rewarded to it, it's just like, hold on a second. If I click like on this, I'm going to be earning points towards, in like your metaphorical Nectar cards, your iTunes card off. It's the same thing. Is if you enjoy floating, and we're giving, it's not just about selling out, here's the referral code to sell to your friends. No, I'd want to take it a step further. I can't wait for the day where I can send the email out saying, hi, Steve, congratulations with your latest referral. You now earned enough for a free float. Come down in the next month and enjoy your float courtesy of all your interactions with us. And that's, at the end of the day, people then get fiercely loyal to small brands. We know from networking experiences, keeping business local. Let's get local business involved. Do what we can for local businesses. That's the ethos of Stuart, you do for networking within your local groups. So let's do that, but let's do this on a B2C, from my point of view, from B2C. Let's get consumers talking to consumers, bringing their friends. And to me, the cost of it is nothing. At the end of the day, what it will do is it will create good quality business where people will enjoy coming here and enjoy telling their friends. And from that point of view, then Groupons are just, for me, a dark memory in the rearview mirror.
And you've hit the big differentiator there as well, that the customer loyalty is more than getting people in through the door. It's creating customers that promote your business, that become referrers as well, that there's a cost for their discount that they're receiving, and the cost to you is, the cost to them is, we want you to become a promoter. You're worthwhile to us getting these discounts if you're promoting the business to us. I mean, if you had sort of like 10 customers and only got one that was a great promoter and was talking about it, taking pictures of the flotation tank, of their experience, sharing it on Facebook, that kind of marketing is worth infinitely more than probably anything you could do sort of manually yourself, because it's peer-led. It's led by the individual. They're endorsing something that they believe in. And I think if you get that result from it, clearly that's a loyalty card, a loyalty scheme success. But the question is, how did you get to that point with it? Because there's a lot of trial and error in here. There's a lot of throwing out the mud at the wall and seeing what sticks.
And this is it. And we tried all the regular ones. We've tried newspaper adverts, editorials in magazines, done a little bit of radio advertising. A couple of the local radio stations have been very generous with their time to us and sort of done a quick feature on us, which has been really nice. But it's about, one of the things I've noticed the last couple of weeks, having been to one of our local businesses, done some training on Facebook. I've been looking at Facebook and how companies get people involved with it, much more than I ever have done for the rest of this year. And the one thing I've noticed is that the amount of posts that are getting liked and shared is feel-good stories. The amount of people that are sharing feel-good stories at the moment. For example, last week, the Brownlee brothers, For those that weren't aware of it, the Brownlee brothers are British guys. They've won gold and silver in the Olympics. The younger brother had to win the race to be the world champion, and he was leading it up to the final bend, and unfortunately he just run out of energy, and it was just horrible to watch this guy literally.
You see him wobbling to the side, his brother come up behind
and
him.
And he basically collapsed onto organizer, got a glass of water, and his brother came running behind him, literally threw his arm around him and dragged him 400 meters to the line. Now, I'm happy to admit that when I watched it, the tears were streaming down my face and watched it. It was such an emotional thing. And I look down and see how many people had shared it, and you start seeing other clips have been sharing it. It's like, people want to feel good. So why don't we do things to make people feel good? And when people recognise that, it's becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy then.
Now, I am wondering though, because I mean, this feel-good thing, I mean, okay, people do like feeling good, but the way it's being shared has been on a massive increase recently. And I'm wondering if there is a slight generational thing that we are seeing a slightly more sensitive generation coming out with the millennials.
I think there may be something, but I think also Facebook has changed slightly their algorithm. And
don't they always
and I'm actually, you know, deliberately there's a few articles, you know, I mean, because clearly some of it is never really specified by them. It's just, you know, it's you know, analysis or hearsay or maybe a nudge wink from them, or, you know, sort of, you know, opaque pronouncements. But yeah, I think there's been a more general thing, more feel good, more sharing, more engaging, because that's,
well, you know, Facebook got the biggest purchase of data, so they clearly have a huge amount of data on everyone that signed up to their website.
Well, they know exactly what they're doing in terms of how to motivate us. Yeah.
Yes, I'm most interested in how they're going to use that for the presidential election, because clearly they're being, I mean, Twitter, Facebook, all the major social medias, YouTube have recently demonetized a lot of the right wing videos, so there's clearly sort of like a lot of impact they can have through very clever ways that where they sort of strategically choose what they think will most engage you on your feed. And they've done a lot of experiments as well around this, about seeing how they can affect and influence people's moods in their day-to-day life based on how they control their feed. It's very 1984 when Big Brother is watching you, but it's extremely clever how they do it. And I think the key is, if you're aware of it, you can have a little bit of control over it. But most won't be aware of it, that these feel-good stories are being controlled and coming in there for it. But I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing either, that there's nothing wrong with making people feel good about it and playing people's emotive sides to it. And if you are worried about it, there's always a off button to Facebook as well.
Yeah, there is.
Some people wouldn't believe that it's there, but it certainly is.
Funny enough, it is there, yes.
Now, let's move on to one final topic then on that as well. Then, does heavy discounting, does that ever have a place in any market? Can you ever justify heavy discounting, penetrative pricing?
I think from a flash sale perspective, yes, but it has to be that, and it has to be a genuine reason. You
say
before,
just describe a flash sale. What do you mean by
a flash sale? Where for a short period of time, 3 days, 4 days, 7 days, or even one day. I mean, Amazon are making a killing every third week in November with Black Friday. That is a flash sale. That is the ultimate flash sale. But there are trigger points, which you've mentioned earlier, which is Mother's Day, the Valentine's Day. There are lots of new days being created recently. I noticed that in September these days, we're getting Grandparents' Day as well now. So
God bless the grannies.
There we go. So at the end of the day, it's creating these moments. But it's smaller companies are having to be more aggressive and find different avenues to it. I've seen quite a few people recently, and tip my hat to them, the back-to-school sale. You know, the kids are back to school, you got time, you got money, why don't you spend it with us? Why not? But the thing is, if people know that the call to action is such a short period of time, it focuses on, can I afford it? Do I want it? Yes or no? If you leave it on as like 20% off verbatim, after a week or two, people get bored of it and it's lost its shine.
Now, I think it's fair to say this is something that came from over the pond. That it's very much American marketing, that you see this at a lot of American conferences, and dare I say multi-level marketing again. The way that they'll do things to motivate people to act is they'll put a time limit on it. They'll say you've got X amount of time to get involved with this product, to be a founder member, to join this, whatever. And that time limit acts as a motivator. I mean, I've seen it done after a conference where they'll say, we've got 5 places left, they'll only be available for the next half an hour, and once it's gone, it's gone, and this is the price it is. After that, it's going back to this price. It'll be a ridiculous discount. It'll be sort of like a regular price of $1,000, and but for today, for this next half hour, $50, and then they'll have a countdown timer come up on there as well, and you'll suddenly see all these people scrabble around to get their forms in first for it, because it is a motivator, because I think you can call it a little bit of reactionary marketing, that it's that reaction to seeing that there's a time limit on there. It's not thinking about, logically, about do I need or want this? It's I must get this before it runs out, that urgency about it. If you can bring that urgency into it, you can clearly make people do some very, very strange, impulsive things that they wouldn't usually do when logic and reason is in place for it. So. I agree. I think Black Friday is a great example of something where heavy discounting has clearly made a huge amount of people react very quickly. However, I would say there's always a danger when you're talking about your own product. If with Amazon, they're clearly selling numerous different products from numerous different suppliers, and you know with them that what's on sale 1 week may not be on sale again for a long time for that, and it's at very much at their discretion rather than the supplier's discretion for that. Whereas when it's your product and you're discounting your product, so say if it was one of my films and I decide that for a week in June, I'm gonna do 50% off for that, I then place an expectation on, well, clearly Steve can afford to lose 50% during this time, so why can't we push for it if we're just outside of it? Then you have to deal with all these questions of, oh, we just missed that offer, could we still get it squeezed in for that? And that becomes a motivator for choosing your service. So I think it's something to look at critically is this the major motivator you're creating? If it's something that is clearly, in part, is something that's going to create an impulse to react, then fair enough, go for it. If it's something where this is a sole and most major motivator, all you're doing is devaluing your product, and the big picture is devaluing your industry as well, which is why some industries you see are now worth so little because they've been so heavily discounted. I mean, IT springs to mind as one where there's a lot of one-man bands that will do it for next to nothing, which actually requires a very high-end, high-skilled, high level of service to get it delivered correctly.
Websites, yes. Yeah, a lot of these guys, you know, the businesses need to grow and the scale. And actually, the whole reflection is, if you want a website for a few hundred quid, you can get one, you know, but you might as well go and learn to do it yourself, because in fact you're not paying enough to keep these guys, you know, going, and you know, they can't support it, so they get busy but become busy fools, and the whole vicious cycle, just a one-man band, and people get, oh yeah, my web designer is no bloody good because he's, you know, he doesn't respond to me. But you're the problem, you know, you're not paying enough money for him to employ staff and support you, you know, and you know, you can't afford it necessarily, but you should go for, you know, there's plenty of cheap do-it-yourself options where, you know, you're going to have to actually get your hands dirty and do it yourself, you know? And I think at some point, you know, the days of the 500 quid website are going to have to bite the dust, because it's just simply not affordable, or there's no, you know, there's no economic longevity to those sort of businesses.
I think the sideways answer to your question is, look at people's shopping behaviours for supermarkets. Mm. I mean, the rise in the last 2 years of the amount of people that shop at Aldi and Lidl, for example, where they stack them high and sell them cheap. Or there's still people that will happily go to Sainsbury's, Tesco's, Waitrose. In fact, Waitrose went the other way because they were saying, we are this quality, we're not going to sell it cheap. If you want quality, come to us. And people do. There will always be people that will buy in the different markets. It's just, can you get them all to come into the market you want?
Yeah, but you're absolutely right. The ones that are left struggling, the top end where they stay true to what they sort of said, we're a high-end product and we're going to stay as a high-end product. The ones where they are known as discounters and can discount far more effectively than
they have a very narrow range as well. They keep it very simple.
There's no buy one, get one free. They got rid of all of that. It's a one price thing, very sensible. And there's a reason that Aldi's opening more floor space than all of the big four combined this year. Yeah. It's no surprise whatsoever.
All their shops are more or less the same size. They operate the same model. The staffing is, you know, it's, the whole thing is done to a very stripped down model. In a sense, you know, we won't sort of touch on too much sort of economic and business theory, but it's very much, you know, sort of Clay Christensen, the innovator's dilemma. You know, they're sort of, you know, the guys who, you know, like the Sainsbury's and Tesco's, you know, how do they compete against these little guys nibbling away, going up and taking away the market? Because actually nobody wants, you know, in some ways, you know, Tesco's is an over-engineered product for the price it charges.
Yep.
You know, the job it's hard to do, which is to supply, you know, the thing is, it's too much. Was Lidl and Aldi hit the spot?
But as a personal perspective, I'd suggest that Tesco's have managed to halt the slide and turn it around a little bit because of the strength of their loyalty scheme.
Mm.
With a club card, because at the end of the day,
without what, doubt, that's
clearly that's a massive, you know, bonus for them, you know, because it allows them to market, it allows them to send direct marketing, you know, prompt the customer to come back, you know, and do some sort of repeat purchase based on their previous buying patterns, etc. Yeah, clearly they have a, you know, monopsonistic, you know, ability to, you know, still remain in market. You know, they won't disappear too quickly.
And it's no surprise why the one struggling is Morrison's.
Yeah.
Sainsbury's still got its niche of the sort of like, the fresh endorsement of the chef's food and things like that. And Asda's got still got the sort of like cheap and sort of like, it's not quite the Aldi and Lidl's of the world, but it's kind of got the
full service cheap side
of things there for it. So
Morrison's
hasn't really got a niche anymore. It's lost its relevance. We've just seen one give up its, they had a base they built in Stafford, put all the work in for it, and then announced that they were no longer going to be moving in because we can only presume that their company's in turmoil again.
The money didn't work, and you know, rumour had it that Waitrose are interested in taking it out of that spot. You know, who knows if that's really true.
This is actually not a particularly well known thing, but it is a business ploy of Morrison's. They buy out sites cheap, they do the three quarters of the work, and then they sell it on to predominantly Waitrose. Actually,
is that right?
Yeah, it's happening to quite a few locations locally. It's happened.
We know about Tesco's being the big landowners where they will buy sites just so that others and competitors won't buy there, and they'll hold that land just to stop any other competitors.
Which works well if your rest of your business is fine, but as Tesco's a struggle, at some point they're going to have to offload that, and that strategy, you know, stops working.
Well, we've diverted our points anyway. Indeed. But what we'd love to hear is, if you've run a loyalty scheme and you've had success from that, tell us, share with us what you did, and it'd be nice to have a follow-up episode with this. So please do get in touch if you'd like to be a guest on the show to talk about loyalty schemes and to give us some advice on what you found worked for you, why it worked for you. If you think we were wrong about our view on discounting, you think discounting actually serves more of a purpose and actually can grow a business sustainably, share that with us as well. So you can tweet us. You can tweet myself at Lilac Films. You can tweet Stuart at Conspicuous CBM and Mark at Time to Float. And Mark, thank you again for joining us on today's episode.
It's been a very relaxing venue.
We've got candles, we've got the crystals out around the table.
Scented magic, you know, and I feel quite relaxed. Actually.
Well, I'll give you the one promotion: you've got to see the place to experience it. So come along and
ask Mark to put you up in a tank, you know. And if somebody listens to his podcast, Mark, you know, and if they give a special discount code, can I come to you with a bit of a promotion and see whether they're actually listening to this?
Because you're going to be coming and joining and floating with us, you'll be members. You'll be able to give them your membership code anyhow, and then you'll be getting the loyalty points.
There we are. So if you're listening to this podcast, come talk to Mark and say, I've listened to you on a podcast, Mark. You know, what deal can you do? I mean, Mark will look after you.
That's what we're trying to do. Get all our customers as raving fans, basically. Come and find out why doing nothing feels so good.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening, everyone. We'll see you on the next episode next Monday.
Bye-bye.
Bye.